last night, Rabbi Lehrfeld and Scott Diamond mentioned that Parshas Kisetze is the parsha that has the greatest number of mitzvos in it. 74 mitzvos, apparently, which is quite extensive, obviously. And the third topic mentioned is called the Ben Sorer Umore, the rebellious son, who parents want to have judged by Beis Din. Now, I remember the first time I learned any of this topic, Rav Yitzchok Witte's Zatzal gave shiur in it one Shavuos night. And he mentioned that it's a machloikes, and the Gemara mentions that this may have never happened whatsoever, and we're only given this mitzvah to basically learn ethical conduct type of thing. The problem we have is that in the Mishnah Sanhedrin, one of the Amoras said, I actually walked by the grave of a Ben Sorer Moro, executed by the court. So, I leave that because nobody seems to reconcile that. So a child turned 13, and I think for about a half a year thereafter, he could potentially be a Ben Sorer Moro, right? And what does he do? He steals money from his parents, and he goes out and he purchases fine wine and really good red meat, and he has a suda with it. And two witnesses saw all this, so the question is, what did they see? Could they see him sneaking money from his parents' purse in the house and doing all this? But whatever it is, this is the case. He's warned, don't do it again. And it says, unfortunately, the child does it a second time. He goes through the same act of thievery and using the money for the best red wine and for, you know, prime fillet steaks, and he has a good meal. Okay? The parents bring him to Beis Din, and the child is given malchus, right? He gets whipped. And they go home. And again, he continues in this manner. And it says, now the parents again bring him to Beis Din. And there's proper testimony by Adas of what he did. And it said, the child is therefore executed, because the Torah predicts that we want to stop him in his tracks, because we believe this is it's predictive that if we let him continue, he'll become a thief and a murderer if he has to fight with someone to get that which he wants. And it says, better let him leave the world while he has yet to commit such heinous sins, rather than to be killed for that. And we're told there are a number of conditions that must be met. The first one is that the child has to be between the age of 13 and 13 and 3 months, younger or older, he can't be treated in this fashion. He has to have two parents, mother and father, and neither one can be lame, can be unable to speak, can be blind or deaf. And because the Pasuk says they've got to say, B'nei nu veh, this child of ours, be able to point to him and talk about him, right? V'lo shama koleinu, he didn't listen to our voice, means both voices have to be able to be heard. And the Medrash says, brings the opinion in the Gemara, how it is almost impossible for the conditions to be met. And therefore, Ben Sarah Remora can't happen. So, the other thing we're taught homiletically is that when they come to Beis Din, they've got to say, our son didn't listen to our voice. And one of the commentators points out, when we say our voice, it's got to talk about parents' voices that were in tandem. They believed in the same things. They stressed the same things being important. And there were no mixed messages given to the child. The Mefarshim bring practical lessons to be taught. One being that a parent's inclination may be to ignore or overlook mischievous behavior. However, significant disobedience and gluttonous are things that they really are required to take action to repair. Don't say that what he's done is because, quote, he's a child. If you don't interfere, you could end up with a juvenile delinquent. The parents are obviously required to educate children in Torah and mitzvot, therefore, to give them teichacha, to reprove them, and to inculcate them with our values. Rav Shamshon Bofol Hirsch said that a proper Jewish home should not put undue significance on good food and drink. He says that's something for Yomim Tovim. That's something that we celebrate with on a day of Kedusha. But if it becomes a matter of that's the way we live at the high levels of society, you're likely to have children who are dysfunctional. And another lesson is that the rebellious son shows the commitment that parents have to have to a Kodesh Baruch Hu Torah and mitzvot. This is one of the strongest bonds, or maybe the strongest bond in the world, is parent to child. And yet, the Torah says that when necessary, tough love is required. And they bring a question, right? It says, for example, it says that Avram Avinu gave the Jewish people the ability to demonstrate tough love. They want to say that the fact that Avram could have brought Yitzchak as a korban on the Akedah is one indication. And I would suggest another indication is the fact that at Sora's bequest, he exiled Yishmael from his home. We read yesterday, I believe, that David's son, Absalom, came from a Yefus Toyer. And he was one of these wild and wanton young people. And David and his, I don't know, whoever was there, they didn't really reprove him. They didn't give him the proper type of discipline and, right, and actually complain about his misdeeds. It says that when Absalom decided he was going to take over and force David out of the kingdom, right? That he said, people are going to think, what happened? My own son came against me. They may turn and blame HaKadosh Baruch Hu, saying, this is totally unfair. Therefore, when I come to the top of a hill, I will pretend I'm bowing to an idol so that people will be under the impression that God is punishing me because I've been unfaithful. That was his plan. It says, David's counselor, Hushai, heard this. He ripped kriya. He put ashes on his head and he said, why would you do this? Why would you let the people think that you, a tzaddik, could have done such a sin? He says, better I should do it. Right? And then they will say, David is not the tzaddik and deserves punishment because one of his senior advisors went off the derech. Hushai said, you don't have to worry that Hashem's name will be desecrated. He said, let me tell you. He said, you married Macha, the daughter of King Talmai of Geshur. She was a Yefus Toar. And even though a Yefus Toar is allowed, you failed to take appropriate notice of the Parshias, the order. The reason the Torah mentions the Yefus Toyar and then the Ben Sorer Morer is because God is saying, unfortunately, if you're going to marry a Yefus Toyar, that's what's going to happen. That's what the child is going to be. So no one's going to really worry. No one's going to say, oh, you're being unjustly punished. People will learn and know that it's a result of what you actually did. Absalom's rebellion caused a rift in David's kingdom, and there were thousands of Yidden who died in the war between Absalom's army and David's. Absalom was killed. He was riding on his mule, and he had exceedingly long hair. Apparently, he was a Nazir who cut his hair once a year. As he was going under the thick branches of an oak tree, his hair became caught, and the mule went on, leaving him hanging between heaven and earth. When Yoav, David's general, saw him there, he took three little spears and he shot them in his heart, and they slew him, basically giving him his just reward for being a Mored B'Malchus, somebody who rebelled against God's king. Hashavas Aveda, the mitzvah to return lost property, is another mitzvah dealt with. If a Yid finds a person's lost article, he has a chiyuv to return it. You can't turn aside. And it says that even if it's only worth a pruta, which people try to say is like a penny's worth, you still gotta take it. And it says you've gotta take it into your home, you've gotta care for it, and there are many rules depending on what it is. If it's animals, you've got to feed it, etc., for a period of time. And you're required that when you go to Yerushalayim, outside the Beis HaMikdash, there was called an Evan Atoyein, a large stone which you people claimed. Somebody who found something would stand on the stone and say, I found an Aveda. And he might say, I found it in Netanya, near the river or something, near the water. And someone would come and say, I lost a cloak. It was this color. This was its dimensions. It had in the back of its pocket my name sewn, etc. And when you gave definite signs, you got it back. It says later on, after the Beis HaMikdash, this same procedure occurred in the shuls and in the study halls. We're told that there's a Gemara that says that people came to one of the Tanoim and they forgot behind some chickens that they had brought. The Tana, and since this is after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, period of time, took them and he took care of them for a while. And when no one came, he sold them. And with the money, he went ahead, it says, he bought goats, and he kept the goats. And after a while, time passed, and he took the goats, and he sold them, and he bought wheat. And he harvested wheat on behalf of these people. And the first crop of wheat was extraordinary. So he took that, he put some in storage, and he planted another crop of wheat. And we're told by the Gemara that that crop of wheat was also extraordinary. So we had these silos full of wheat for the people if they came back. And the Gemara tells that, yes, eventually some guys came back, and they said, they went into the Tana's home and they said, we don't know if you remember, but we were here 2.5-3 years ago and we left some chickens. Is there any way you still have them? And he says, come, let me show you. He takes them out and he shows them silos full of wheat and he says, this is the proceeds of your chickens, it's all yours, please take it. And the Gemara shows as the care that this Tana took. There's a Shaila asked contemporary the following. In Yerushalayim, let's say in Ramat Beit Shemesh, someone was walking past a bus stop and he saw a expensive coat lying on the floor. He picks it up and he says, obviously somebody must have forgotten it here somehow. He looks inside and he sees it belongs to Shimon Katz. He says, I know Shimon Katz. He takes it home. And when his 8-year-old son comes home, he says to him, you know your good friend Elchanan Katz? His father lost a coat. Do me a favor. Walk the 6 blocks or the 6 buildings down and return it. And the 8-year-old says gladly. And is apt to happen with 8-year-olds. He's walking by and in the schoolyard, before he gets to the spot, his friends are playing soccer and they need another guy and they get him to come. And he comes and he plays for an hour and forgets the coat. Then he goes home and his father says, oh, you probably played after. He says, yeah. He says, where's the coat? Kid says, what coat? And he reminds him and he says, oh my gosh, I left it in the park. So they go to the park and he and his father and they can't find it. So he says, okay, kids are kids for fallen. He calls up Shimon Katz and he says to him, you lost the coat. He says, yeah. He says, I found it. Oh great, he says, have your 8-year-old son bring it to my house tomorrow when he comes to have a play date with my son. So the rabbi asked the question. We have the whole Masechta Bava Metzia dealing with lost objects and the responsibilities you have for them. He said, we believe, based on what the Mishnah says, that leaving it with a minor is inappropriate, and so you should be responsible for the minor's loss. In this case, however, where the owner says, send it with a minor child, he is apparently retroactively okaying that you send it with a child, and therefore he's absolving you from the responsibility. What is a halacha? Are you free or not? And the answer is, of course, it's a machlokas. Can you be retroactively let off the hook or not?